Life Show on UK Health Radio. I'm Robin Daly, the host for the show and also founder of the UK charity Yes to Life that helps people with cancer to learn about and use integrative medicine to help them deal with all the challenges of cancer. My guest this week has been deeply immersed in the world of supporting people with cancer for a long time and as a result always has a good deal of wisdom to share on her chosen area of research and activity, food as medicine. Alex Laird is a herbalist and a great advocate of the power of good nutrition to sustain us and repair damage from both disease and harsh treatment. I'm speaking to Alice over the internet at her home in London.
Hi Alex, delighted to welcome you back to the Yes to Life show.
Very happy to be here.
So today we're going to be looking at the topic of managing the terrain of the body to create an environment that's not conducive to cancer occurring, to it growing or spreading. And I use the word terrain here because it's banded around quite a bit these days, particularly when it comes to people who use metabolic approaches to cancer. Is that a term that you use and what's meant by it?
Yes, I do use it. I tend to actually use the word ecology more of the body or the environment or what we are bathed in, whether it be emotional, physical, you know, food, whatever. But terrain is really good because it gives the idea of very common to, you know, various traditions of medicine, natural medicine. And it refers to, the, if you like, the earth, the environment, the surrounding, you could say, and this constitution almost of how the body is and what it's going to respond to and is very multifactorial, which is just the same as with wine. Or any other plants, actually. And that's how it's often used, isn't it, in winemaking?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so another thing gets spoken about a lot these days is the question of balance. So very often nowadays, it's not a case of blocking or boosting anything so much as of achieving and maintaining balance. Or I think homeostasis is the word that's used in medical fields. So homeostasis seems to be a bit of a holy grail these days. Can you explain what that is and what approaches can help in achieving it?
Well, homeostasis, I mean, first of all, I think the word balance and homeostasis are both a dynamic. They're dynamic concepts.
Right.
Balance isn't about something that is isn't static. It's a constantly moving, if you like, you know, the pivoting as a seesaw. In response to, you know, literally thousands, maybe millions of different factors that are going on, you know, us responding to the environment, heat, cold, damp, dry, the people around us, the events that happen to us, all of those are affecting literally every single second how our body is then responding. Our body is responding every single second. So, and managing itself and trying to keep that dynamic balance, that homeostasis. Homeo means same, and stasis is state, you could say. So trying to keep that middle, I think one might call it like a middle ground, which is comfortable for the body, if you like, that is enabling it to function fully and be responsive, actually. I mean, that's the key thing.
Mm, very interesting.
So I actually really like the word also to add to those, to maintain balance or, you know, this dynamic balance and this homeostasis. I would like to add the concept of hormesis, which is H-O-R-M-E-S-I-S, because that's, then you see those different environmental challenges, opportunities are what the body then develops resilience to deal with. So loading a muscle, for example, a load on a muscle is a stressor of hopefully not too great a one, because if it's too great, it'll break the body, break the bone and the muscle or damage it. But if it's of the appropriate amount of load, it'll make the body strengthen. It'll get the muscle, will get the receptors of the stretch receptors, will respond to that load and literally strengthen that muscle and ditto the bone. So hormesis is this having enough of the right stressors, you could say, and responding appropriately to them to strengthen, and that's what creates life, is all those various stressors, opportunities, challenge that do create a certain amount of stress on the body, but it's an appropriate, healthy stress.
Evolutionary stress.
Evolutionary stress, exactly.
Yeah. Anyway, the picture you painted of the of maintaining balance and the way you were and saying it was actually a dynamic moving thing put me in mind of windsurfing, which is something I've done quite a lot of at one time in my life. And in that, you are dealing intuitively in the end. You don't do it with your mind once you've learned to do it, but you're dealing intuitively with the waves, the current, the wind. You know, everything is changing and moving all the time. The weight, the balance, it's all, everything needs adjusting, but you're trying to go in one direction. So you're trying to maintain you know, what you're doing, carrying along in life in amongst all these changing factors. And it seems very like what you just described.
Exactly like that, exactly, because you're dealing with lots of factors, and you're trying, you've got an objective, which in our terms, the objective is actually to respond appropriately to the stress and to thrive in response to that stress, as opposed to go in a certain direction. But that's the same sort of thing.
Yeah, interesting. Okay, so a lot of people nowadays understand the key role that inflammation can play in disrupting the terrain and therefore disrupting your lovely homeostasis. It's recognized universally as one of the key hallmarks of cancer. In fact, you could say it was a key hallmark of pretty much any chronic disease, full stop. How important would you say it is to address inflammation if you've got cancer, or if you've had cancer, or even if you don't feel like having cancer?
Well, I think first of all, it's important to note that inflammation is again an incredibly important natural response to, again, to excess stress, if you could say, or a cut, on the skin, or actually inflammation, for example, to have a period to for the uterus to bleed, in a normal physiological way, requires an inflammatory process to burst the blood vessels. I mean, how does otherwise will there be a bleed? It's because there's inflammatory mediators, cytokines are whizzing around the body in response to hormone changes, in order to break down that lining of blood if there is no pregnancy. So inflammation is absolutely fundamental. So when you cut yourself, for example, the surrounding tissue and blood vessels and so on release. There's blood is released, there are other inflammatory chemicals which are released to actually gather to that site of damage, which accounts for the swelling as this blood vessels open up and basically start to deal with the process of healing. So inflammation is absolutely fundamental. What happens though with something like cancer is that because we humans are so complex, and we are often not behaving, not eating, not living within those boundaries of hormesis, if you like, within the boundaries of what is healthy, we get so many of these stressors, eating too much of one kind of food, having too much blood sugar, high blood sugar in insulin, lots of stress which isn't then dealt with or processed, emotional stress, which is probably even more important than food, food effects, all of which is creating an environment in our body, the terrain, you could say. This is when inflammation then gets out of control, and it can lead to, the chronic diseases that we know so well, like diabetes and heart disease and arteriosclerosis with furring up of arteries. I mean, these are all inflammatory, and cancer too, which is highly complex, but which is partly like cells that should be replicating normally and behaving the laws of replication to become a liver cell or a lung cell or a breast ductal cell, whatever it is, but actually getting out of control and not being correctly, not replicating correctly, and behaving a bit like adolescents without all the normal controls that they should have. Right. So that's when inflammation goes awry.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that, you know, as you said earlier, that stressors are a good thing in limited quantity or in the right quantity or the appropriate quantity. But if you go beyond that, then you're in trouble potentially, which is really what you're saying happens in the case of diagnosis like cancer. It's just you've been overwhelmed, if you like.
But the beauty is, Robin, of course, with this extraordinary organism that we are, the complexity that has responded over millions and millions of years, a body or a body like ours, whether it's, you know, an ape or even going right back to the beginning to, you know, algae, it's all about adaptation. And we are brilliant at repairing ourselves. You know, we come with the repair kit instructions, and our job is to really understand what do we need to come back, you could say, back to that homeostasis when we've been out at sea, you know, and losing the plot and having a capsize. We're trying to then come back into the orderly, the more orderly center.
Absolutely. So I wanted to maybe go on to explore the relationship between inflammation and our immune system. So we got these two things going on. Our immune system's built exactly for the purpose of dealing with the sources of inflammation. That's like, you know, an infection, say, or damage. So what's going on when it becomes chronic inflammation? This is a different situation, isn't it?
Well, what happens then? I mean, inflammation can take various forms. So the inflammation you get on the skin or a cut or whatever, or a broken bone, is going to be slightly different from the inflammatory, systemic inflammatory process that's going on that allows a cancerous cell to develop.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, we do have cancerous cells developing in all of us all of the time, but mostly our environment, our terrain, is on the whole, able to spot them, those rogue cells, and then gobble them up and take them apart and transform them and reuse the parts.
Right.
That's what's happening. But inflammation, so there are various processes going on, and I think we're still learning about what some of those are of inflammation. But simple examples of that are when, for example, hormones, let's just take breast cancer. I mean, we could take other things, but breast cancer is an example where long exposure to, say, estrogen, and estrogen is a very powerful inflammatory hormone. Most of our hormones are all about growth, and growth is what gets out of control with a cell, cells that are replicating. So first of all, you may have long exposure to estrogen, lots of receptors all over the body for estrogen, which tend to therefore be inflammatory, tend to create an inflammatory environment, unless that's better controlled. So that can mean grow. So these are receptors for estrogen as a kind of protein, and other proteins that are growth factors, which anybody who has had breast cancer, men included, will know, like HER2, HER2 NOI, which is another protein, which is a growth, please grow. These are overexpressed. There are too many of them, and the exposure for the person is for too long. So that's one major area of inflammation that we would want to address. And there are definitely lots of ways that you can address this excess expression of those receptors.
Right.
I mean, the typical example is, in particularly when a cancer gets, I don't know, it's about at least a centimeter of a tumor becomes a centimeter, then cancer initiates this very clever growth of its own blood vessels in order to get food to grow further. And then it kind of it puts down little feelers of new blood vessels into, latches onto our existing healthy blood vessels, and creates what's called angiogenesis. Angiogenesis is a normal process, but it's hijacked, if you like, by cancer. So angiogenesis by a cancer cell is not proper. It's not correctly done. It's quickly made. It makes quick blood vessels. But that process, Robin, is also inflammatory.
Mm.
The cancer type of angiogenesis is inflammatory. And again, there are lots of things that we can talk about that actually help to inhibit that process as we understand it, certainly in vitro. If not, we may have other sources of evidence for that. I mean, those are just two really good examples. But yet, then blood sugar and high insulin and insulin-like growth factor also contribute to inflammation in the body in other areas, but through the bloodstream.
Mm.
Okay. And again, cause growth, really, and give sugar and energy to a tumor cell or to anything else for that matter.
Mm-hmm.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Nagging pain. We at Alka-Seltz know that a small amount of the patient's own bone marrow and blood cells can treat many painful conditions with regenerative orthopedic therapy. This is an attractive treatment option for painful joints, back pain, sports injuries, and many other conditions. It may avoid the need for surgery altogether. Alka-Seltz, part of a network of 50 RegenX clinics worldwide where over 60,000 patients have been treated and helped. Alka-Seltz, life is more beautiful with less pain.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
The station that makes you feel good.
So, in regard to our own immune system, though, it's basically facing a situation that it's been overwhelmed in some ways. Is that right? And it hasn't got the capacity to deal with what it's faced with.
So it's yeah, because there are all these factors, probably coupled with a liver function that is maybe below par and isn't properly excreting, isn't detoxifying, metabolizing, excreting some of these components. And so that needs addressing. You know, food keeps ramping all these things up, but the wrong kind of inflammatory foods may keep ramping that situation, the terrain, the inflammatory terrain up. It may be emotional issues are, you know, creating again havoc in the body because it and poor sleep, not being able to repair well enough, you know, because you're not sleeping properly, and that's supposed to be our repair time. Mm. So, yeah, those are some examples. You know, there are a mass of genes involved, the way genes respond, epigenetics, which means what's the environment, back to the terrain, what's the environment in which a gene is operating, what are the different variations in each of us on particular genes in particular pathways of detoxification, of hormones, that either predispose us to more inflammatory activity or don't. And then that has an effect on various aspects of the immune system. I mean, there are signaling. It's a beautifully made system, the immune system.
Mm.
And on the one hand, you've got, you know, your innate immune system that animals, everybody is born with our innate immune system, which is things like saliva and nice, very, very acidic stomach to kill bugs that we're taking in with the food, and the gut microbiome, which is very responsible for maturing immune cells in the gut. Most of our immune cells are in the gut, our white blood cells. So all this and many, many more aspects are part of the innate immune system, the old, original innate immune system. Then we have this other one called the adaptive immune system, which also involves white blood cells, but very specific antibodies, which are made in response to very specific viruses and also can be activated with cancer too. So immune cells, we've got them all over, rushing through our bloodstream, you know, these white blood cells of various sorts. We've got signaling cells, molecules that are saying, this isn't right. Here's too much of a bacteria or too much of a virus. And we need to be alert and either present those viruses, sort of capture them and present them to other white blood cells. It's a highly differentiated, clever system that's designed to respond to very specific different, I wouldn't say invaders, because we're all made up of many, many viruses, bacteria, fungi, you know, and let alone small tumours developing and then being gobbled up most of the time.
Yeah, attitudes on where we end and bugs begin have changed, haven't they, a lot recently. It's getting difficult to say who's in charge, us or the bugs.
Exactly. And we also have fragments of all kinds of viruses. I mean, we may not be HIV positive, but we may be, we may have fragments of HIV in all of us. That's, you know, this is just part of the process of living. Things only become problematic when you get major exposure or you have very, very poor immune responses. And that's what we're dealing with here, is how do we, when we're talking about cancer, is how do we support this beautifully designed system, or two systems, if you like, in our body. But that requires supporting all those other things like circulatory function, liver function, emotional well-being, and so on.
Right. Lots of strategies, which we're going to talk about in a minute. So the sort of reasoning, if you like, behind paying attention to inflammation and controlling it is that this is like a bit of a fire going, where it's actually driving processes like cancer along. Is that a reasonable way of describing it?
I think, yeah, that is quite a good way, because it is a bit, I mean, inflammation literally means fire, doesn't it? Flames. So, and very often it is associated with heat, actually. That's true.
That's right.
Always, but certainly when you score your, when you hurt your skin, just as simple, even right, putting your nail over it, you will see redness, heat, swelling, and so on. So those are the three of the five cardinal signs for inflammation. So heat is definitely one of them. But yes, it is like a fire which is not being put out appropriately, and it's allowed to simmer.
Yeah. Okay. Well, so it's important, and that's why we're going to look at it a bit more now and talk about the approaches that you can use to inflammation. Okay, so you recognize you've got inflammation either because you stumble across it in some way or it's obvious, or because you're actually got a condition which indicates that you must have inflammation, which I assume would be true about cancer. So there you are. What are the most widely used and most effective approaches to controlling inflammation?
Well, the key thing, and by the way, I should just say that the point about inflammation, it's when the fire, it's not just that the fire gets out of control, it's not resolved. So inflammation is there, it's meant to happen, but it should be resolved. And when things are working properly, it's resolved so that you then end up with a healing, a wound healing, or a cancer that's being taken apart and dismantled and excreted, if you like, or reused, the parts are reused. But in terms of what are the strategies, you could say that the first thing is to follow, you know, the rhythms of the body, the daily, the daily rhythm.
Right.
So that is the just taking note of when you go to bed, when you wake up, hopefully, because we were originally designed not to be nocturnal animals. Having said that, and really to go to sleep with the dark and wake up with the light. That's how we're programmed, and that's hardwired into us. But actually, there could be two phases of sleep. So there could be, you know, sort of 9 till 2, and then maybe there's evidence that people got up and prayed, or maybe even saw friends for an hour or so in the middle of the night and then went back to sleep again. So there's some evidence for that. Yeah. But basically, we do need, as all the researchers are telling us at the moment, to have good quality sleep, which of course gets less as we get older, it seems. But we do need that because most of our growth hormone, which is a very important hormone for repair, about 75% of that appears to be secreted between 10 p.m. and 2 a.m. So you want to get some of that, you know, even if it's only a couple of hours. And to have that quality of sleep. And that's your repair, which is such a key thing. And I think all of us know how much better you feel when you have a good night's sleep. It's astonishing, the difference. Mm. So waking up in the morning, getting good light, you know, all the sleep hygiene things, having a pen and paper by the bed so that you can, in the dark, write down what thoughts are going round and round in your head and offload them, which is incredibly beneficial.
Mm. I've not heard that.
So it's the circadian rhythm, the daily 24-hour rhythm that allows our bodies, that we support our body. We eat mostly during the daylight hours, and with much less smaller meal in the evening, which of course many of us don't do because it doesn't suit our lifestyles. But actually we should probably be having most of our food during the middle of the day, because that's what our hormones and our appetite and so on actually do seem to indicate. And also not eating so much, because we all eat so much. And I think aging and cancer, there's quite a lot of link between some of the research going on into aging and longevity and cancer. And we do all probably, as I say, eat too much, and that's metabolically demanding for us.
Mm.
And can be inflammatory.
Interesting. Right. And that's purely kind of a cultural habit, if you like, where conditioned to eat a lot because there is plenty, and maybe our forebears have been through times when there wasn't. And so they thought, right, we got it now, we're going to eat it.
But then there you are. That's the thing. Exactly. We tend to sort of, and we need to do that a bit during the winter, because in a way, following nature, you've got spring, summer, you know, you're being active during the summer, and then we start going into winter and it's much more about storage and rest and repair and longer nights and fasting is the flip side of that. And fasting is, again, what we've been exposed to, what we're designed for. And there's so much evidence now coming out about the role of fasting, not controlled fasting. I mean, not just any old kind of fasting, but controlled fasting seems to play a really important role in making chemotherapy more effective and maybe less harmful to helpful to beneficial cells, to healthy cells. But so, yes, it's taking stress off the body, you could say, and allowing the body to do a bit more repair again, even if it's during the day. Mm. And it's less inflammatory, eating less, having fasting seems to be, even if it's, say, the 14-hour overnight fast, which isn't really difficult for people to do. And the other key thing, of course, is weight gain. Again, the link between inflammation and weight. And that doesn't mean to say that only people who are overweight, of course, get cancer. Those who are maybe underweight or have so-called normal weight can also get cancer, regardless of having fewer fat cells. But fat cells actually now are understood to behave like hormones. They're actually releasing inflammatory, what are called inflammatory cytokines, fat cells, adipose tissue. So it does make sense, you know, and to affect any kind of inflammatory response, you know, whether it's heart disease or cancer.
Mm.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Nagging pain. We at Alka-Seltzer know that a small amount of the patient's own bone marrow and blood cells can treat many painful conditions with regenerative orthopedic therapy. This is an attractive treatment option for painful joints, back pain, sports injuries, and many other conditions. It may avoid the need for surgery altogether. Alka-Seltzer, part of a network of 50 RegenX clinics worldwide, where over 60,000 patients have been treated and helped. Alka-Seltzer. Life is more beautiful with less pain.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Okay, so right up the top of the list, you've got these kind of lifestyle factors of getting back to your roots and doing the things that human beings were built for and fitting in with the schedule and not being too modern about things. That's great, because of course it's all very doable. It's right within people's own remit to do something about that. How about other more, things you might consult somebody to get help with to deal with inflammation, somebody might come see you about?
Yeah. Well, what I mean, first of all, we establish, you know, well, I would ask questions about when they go to bed and when they wake up. And also make it clear that it's not about suddenly having this wholesale change. None of us do that. You know, it's about little, making one or two changes that make you feel good. So really this should be driven by pleasure and what feels good. And that's the point. And developing new habits, just like, you know, we do our teeth every day. And ideally we should move. You know, we do need to move. It doesn't mean to say that you've got to do a marathon, but just moving in between sitting at that computer or whatever it is really, again, it can actually help you feel better. And of course, then that becomes its own driver. So I think, yes, the next thing is really, I would say, really basic thing is establishing a healthy blood sugar level so that when you eat, well, first of all, you're not having lots of ups and downs of blood sugar because you're eating, you know, highly refined carbohydrate. Basically, it's pretty shocking how narrow our diets have become, our industrial diet. So we're basically eating white pap food. It's not really even food. When we're designed, our bodies have developed in response to the exposure to whole food with plenty of skin and seeds, and we on the whole eat all of those. There's masses of fiber in there which we need to feed our gut microbes, but above all, and variety, huge amount of varieties, again what we've been exposed to most of the time in our evolution. But the key thing here is eating those whole foods with lots of fiber in them, natural fiber, in their whole food form, as close to nature as possible, like the skins of apples and pears and squashes, unless they're really, really thick, and not perhaps the skin of the pineapple, but the skin of anything else that you can have, and lots of leafy greens and so on. The key there is that that fiber, our bodies take a long time to break that down. And so instead of having something where the machine has removed that fiber, as in white bread or white flour, anything made with white flour, white pasta, that then what happens when there's no fiber there or very little, the body simply is able to get at those sugars very quickly that make up the carbohydrate and whack up our blood sugar. And then our insulin has to be released from the pancreas to take that blood sugar, which shouldn't be too high, and store it, usually as triglycerides in the liver or possibly as fat. So this up and down of blood sugar, you know, Cheerios, whatever it is, you know, some refined cereal in the morning with some, maybe a bit of milk, and then maybe a croissant, and then a lunch, which might be white rice with, you know, more pasta, and maybe a biscuit in the middle of the day. All of this, delicious though these things are, are actually meaning our blood sugar is going up and down like a yo-yo, and we're feeling bad because once your blood sugar goes low, you feel, I must have some more blood sugar because that's what the brain needs. But that's not what we're designed for, and that's what is leading to diabetes and inflammation.
Right.
various things go on that cause this inflammatory response. It's very stressful on the body. All is literally adrenaline is produced, which is the fight or flight hormone from the adrenal glands when our blood sugar is low. So it's a whole cycle. Number one, after all those other circadian rhythm things, lifestyle stuff, it's about addressing how just putting some, if you are a breakfast eater and you don't have to eat breakfast because you could be fasting, but putting in there a good breakfast if that's what you like. And so slow releasing whole food, could be meat, it could be fish, it could be vegetables, it could be oats, nuts, seeds. Oatmeal is even better than oat flakes because it's less processed by a machine. We are the machine and we need to do the breaking down. And once you've established that, then you've got a much healthier anti-inflammatory, or rather managed appropriately leveled blood sugar and insulin, much more gradual. You've got nourishment in the body. You've got drip feed rather than great big ups and downs of glucose going to the brain as it needs every second. Mm-hmm. And you establish a balance, you could say, your dynamic balance through the day, and adding beans and black rice and black dark quinoa and, as I say, fish if you are a fish eater, and vegetables, nuts, seeds, all of these things are whole food, look like they do in nature, and that's really what we're designed for, to keep the blood sugar even.
Mm-hmm. So it's like you're describing fiber as a useful stressor then that actually we respond to well.
Well, you know, interestingly, what we think actually happens with, for example, both fiber, which has many, many roles in the body, mm-hmm. as we understand it, but also things like the spices or herbs or even drugs, from which obviously the spices and the herbs are where often many of our drugs come from. But they may be acting on the gut wall, like turmeric, for example, that everybody is. It may be acting as a stressor, like a little pokey thing to the gut wall, which is highly responsive, highly complex, and saying, aha, here is a thing, here is a compound, a molecule or several molecules of lots of different chemicals, which is saying, maybe we need to respond in some way here. Maybe this could be a little bit threatening. And then up come these immune cells, or there's a maturing of immune cells. I mean, that's only one pathway there. But then the fiber is, perhaps it's bulking out the bowel, it's absorbing liquid as it goes down, it's feeding the gut microbes, which then help to produce all kinds of metabolites, little compounds and cells, which give energy, short-chain fatty acids. They produce these other metabolites, which actually help to mature the white blood cells, most of which are in our gut. So, yeah, fiber is creating, and it's bulking out the stool. It's just doing a whole heap of things.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, and I think as a shopper, you have to be quite wised up, because, of course, as the message gets out about the connection between food and health, they've been trying to cover it up for a long time. But as it gets out, there's ever more attempts to make things that aren't that great look great, and to use all the right words on them and everything. But the safest way to avoid being lured into some trap of something which is actually not that good for you is to go in the direction that you described, which is you're sticking with actual whole foods, with things that are not processed in any way. If there's any processing happens, you do it.
That's it. That's the idea. And I think, you see, the other thing that's so fascinating is that our bodies, this extraordinarily complex organism, although we're all very different and we all have different microbes in the gut and we all have different ways of handling foods and different tastes and everything about us, each of us is very different. Nevertheless, we are all overall designed to have those whole foods. I mean, there's no two ways about it. And our bodies will adapt. So I don't know whether you find this and whether other people find this, but certainly as you change, begin to make changes to how we're designed, to follow our design with more whole foods by adding them into your diet, you start feeling different. And you start functioning in a different way. The bowel starts to move better. Your immune responses may start to be better over time as you're feeding the gut microbes with all these important, with what they need to then give back to us a better quality of immune cell, you know, to mature those immune cells. So tastes change, you know, we can take, our tastes will change. Mm. And I've certainly found that my, over years, my desire for sugar is, I mean, my tolerance is much, much less great. Mm. I love creamy things, and I'm actually having, you know, double cream given almost every day, you know, probably at least a tablespoon. And I think but sugary things, I just can't have, you know, too much sugary stuff. It just doesn't, I just don't have the taste for it. Mm. And I'm sure that's partly because of the way my gut has changed and just not having the need for sugar because my blood sugar is kept relatively stable.
Right. Interesting. Yeah, no, it definitely feels that way. That there's a kind of a point which people reach, which is what they would say is, oh, well, it's now sweet. You know, there's enough sugar content for it to be sweet. But that point is very different for different people. And even for yourself, it can change if you change your eating habits. You know, I definitely recognize that my level at which I think something sweet is way lower than it used to be.
Well, there you are. There you are. You see, we do change. Yeah. Maybe also, I mean, I think that, you know, eating fermented foods like kimchi and kefir and are absolutely extraordinary because for fast tracking changes, beneficial changes in the microbiome. And of course, the sour tastes that you get from that because of lactic acid and various other acids that are produced by the bacteria that are gobbling up the sugars in those kimchis or in the milk sugar in the milk to make kefir, for example. Mm. You know, you start having because it is what we're designed for, we start having tastes for those things and enjoying them. And then the things that we're not really designed for, which is too much sugar all the time, starts to decline. Mm. So yeah, we're very flexible, Robin. I think that's the beauty of the design.
Mm. Okay, well, look, you're a herbalist and you've not been talking about herbs much in this, I've noticed. But I mean, you mentioned turmeric, which is a sort of thing that herbalists, I think, would use in an inflammatory situation. What else would you bring to the table as a herbalist?
Well, I think first I would be talking about, I actually don't really like this term herbalist or because it's really, really misleading. Basically, we're talking plant medicine. That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
So plant medicine means what's a growing thing, a plant, whether it's food or whether it's a herb. And the only difference you could say loosely is that the herbs and the spices are much more concentrated in those phytochemicals. So basically, we need foods of huge variety, i.e. a little of a great variety every day of colours and tastes and so on, because that means that we're going to be getting a great deal of lots of different chemicals that our bodies need to actually function fully. So all those lovely red berries and great black grapes with their seeds, very important for the polyphenols, which is a large group of what are called phytochemicals. So the phytochemicals are what are concentrated, you could say, in the spices and the herbs, which we give as medicine. But the foods, all other foods, plant foods, of course, also have those in. It's just that they've also got lots of sugars and protein and carbs and fats and so on as well, and vitamins and minerals. But it's a combination of all of those that we need. And we certainly, the phytochemicals or phytonutrients, phyto means plant, and phytochemicals or phytonutrients, same thing, are what plants, whether they're foods or herbs, are producing to defend themselves or to reach out, to make opportunities. These are chemicals they make in response to their environment. And those are what in us make that food or that herb therapeutic or medicinal. So on the one hand, you've got those lovely sulfur compounds the mustardy tasting compounds in the mustard family, brassicas, you know, the cabbages and the mustards and horseradish, all of that. Those sulfur containing compounds are glucosinolates or isothiocyanates, doesn't matter what they're called really, but those are what the liver really needs to detoxify. Super important for the liver. Then you've got the lovely dark colours, the pigments in berries, in the red grapes and black grapes, and in the black beans and the red kidney beans. All of those colours are what, surprise, surprise, the body needs to keep its blood vessels healthy. So when we talked about angiogenesis, cancer angiogenesis at the beginning, this unhealthy, quick built little blood supply, that can be dismantled because it's not a healthy, normal form of blood supply. It can be dismantled by these anti-angiogenic pigments. Mm. So that's one of the ways in which these flavonoids, they're called polyphenol flavonoids, actually work to be anti-angiogenic, it is believed, is by just by taking those into your diet and building healthy blood vessels, but breaking down unhealthy ones. Isn't that so clever? That's what we mean by
amazing. Isn't that amazing? Yeah, how these, the synergy in these things is mind-boggling.
And the pigments in turmeric, Robin, that the other thing, the turmeric, the pigment, that curcumin, which forms not most, but a large part of turmeric, curcumin, plus another X thousand chemicals we don't yet know,
right,
is part of the active ingredient, but it's not only, but that one is probably having some, again, beneficial action against the cell wall. It may not need to be absorbed into the body. Mm. So all this talk about, oh, well, you've got to absorb, it's better absorbed if you take it with X, Y, and Z, may not be that, but it may act better on the cell wall if you take it with something fatty like some yogurt or oil, or if there's yogurt or oil in the diet.
Mm. Okay, well, look, we just got a few minutes left. I wanted to ask about one other thing, which is, of course, the conventional treatments that people go through are often highly inflammatory themselves. And you've already been through a sort of checklist, which I think you'd probably go through with anybody who approached you, either if they got cancer and having treatment, or if they've had cancer, or even if they want to prevent cancer. That's probably a checklist for anyone who wants to stay healthy and in have good homeostasis. But somebody in particular is going through one of these inflammatory treatments. Are there specialist interventions on your part which can help them?
Yes. So it's the approach is to help with both foods and herbs safely alongside whatever chemotherapy is, and ideally or radiotherapy, and ideally working with the oncologists, and to show what isn't going to interfere with the chemo or radiotherapy, but support the healthy cells and make the, hopefully even make the cancer cells more sensitive to the chemotherapy, but above all, support the rest of the healthy functioning of the immune system, which is under great, obviously it's under great strain in the chemo necessarily. So yes, using foods to support the gut function, also helping against the effects of the steroids that are given necessarily with the chemo to prevent the chemo being rejected.
Mm.
But it's an anti-inflammatory, it's an immune dampener, the steroid. But that also has its effects of making you very awake and maybe not sleeping and all sorts of other things. So yes, there are lots of things we can do and would give, but you need to know what you're doing with that and have some evidence behind you, even if it's not randomized controlled trials, but good clinical evidence that you're doing, and maybe some experimental evidence, in vitro evidence that says this is what's happening here with this plant and this is why it's safe to use alongside. So yes, we'd look at diet and we'd probably give herbal medicine. We'd look at other natural things like, you know, helping with nausea control by using ginger, adding ginger into teas and there's so many different ways that you can take herbs, and foods are obviously one way, but we would give tinctures or tablets, or as a professional medical herbalist who's competent to do this.
Which might be helpful for somebody who's going through something like chemo, which makes eating not excellent.
Exactly. Well, it's also understanding. I think another role that lots of us here on Yes to Life are so good at doing is explaining why, you know, what is happening in chemotherapy to the body, and what is it that we can use plants, foods, and other methods, you know, acupuncture, it might be whatever other intervention, to actually support the functioning of the body. And it's things like understanding that chemo is about fast turnover cells, and therefore it's attacking the fast turnover cells that go all the way down from the mouth right down to the anus and the rectum and the anus, and our gut strips is constantly going through turnover, and that's why it tends to get very irritated with chemotherapy, because it's enhances the what speeds up the breakdown of those gut protective cells. So we want to put back lovely gooey, like gelatinous mucus type foods that would then protect the gut and make it less irritated.
So that's certainly an area where some getting some good expertise online can you can reap benefits from. Yeah. All right. Well, look, we're out of time. Thanks so much for coming on today, Alex. It's always really informative when I talk to you, and a great pleasure.
Thank you, Robin. No, it's fun to talk about it.
Bye-bye.
Alex is always such a joy to discuss health and nutrition with. Her passion and depth of knowledge in regards to foods is brilliant. Thanks so much for joining me this week. I hope you'll be able to join me again next week for another edition of the Yes to Life show here on UK Health Radio. Goodbye. Thank you.